Hello and welcome to Beer Prime, episode 70, featuring Siren Craft Brew. Thanks again for joining me on Beer Prime, episode 70, as I said at the start, and it features Siren Craft Brew. Now, we did have Siren on the podcast before, way back in episode 2, and then a little later for a little catch up. This time, I'm going to be speaking to founder Darren Anley, and we're going to be talking all about their 10th anniversary. They've been going for 10 years this year. So there's lots to talk about, and that's coming up very, very soon. First, though, what we'll do is we'll have a look at what's going on in the world of craft beer. And we'll start with the changes that are afoot at Middlechild. If you were listening to the homebrew episode that was recorded at Hopstop, again, sorry for the audio on that, you will remember that Fraser Withers, who was with us there to judge the homebrews, mentioned that there would be some announcements to come. Well, excitingly, we now know all about that. I've been sent a statement and it says, "We've been a bit quiet lately, but that's all about to change. Sam Jones, who was with the company at the beginning, has moved on to other pastures and a new team has joined me to make a company of four. They're Linda Birch of Brewery Market fame, Ian Watley, and Vincent Clifford, who are two other local homebrewers. There is going to be a rebrand to go with this update, which we're super excited about. We can't give much away at this stage, but we think it's a great new direction. We're also increasing our capacity up to 200 litres, and while we're working on the new brand, we're releasing our beers in kegs instead of cans. However, we hope to be back in cans again soon to be available in many more venues. It would be great to keep you in the loop as we move forward, so please do get in touch if you have any questions." So that sounds very exciting. Can't wait to see the new rebrand. I believe their East Molesey Pale is currently pouring quite a few bars, so I think it's in Hopstop in Reigate, which is the bar that I go to a lot, so I'll pop down there and try the beer out. Okay, moving on to another guest a few episodes ago, that's Leith's Moonwake Beer Co. They are hosting their first ever beer festival, pouring from 24 taps from 28th to 30th of July. The taps will be pouring beer from around the UK and beyond. Local businesses Ban Me Brothers and Guisado's will be on hand too with street food. The festival will take place from Friday at 5 p.m. to 10. There are various sessions on Saturday, and Sunday is a family day from noon till 8 p.m. Tickets start at £5 and are available via the Moonwake website, which is moonwakebeer.com. So have a look at that if you fancy going to that festival. I'm also going to talk about Elusive Brewing and their birthday celebrations. I did mention it, I think, on the last episode or maybe the one before that. They are having a party to celebrate 7 years at their tap room in Finchamstead this coming Saturday. They also launched their birthday homebrew competition, where 150 kits were available from the malt miller. That went on sale at 11 a.m. this morning, if you're listening on the day of release. So get over to the malt miller. It's possible that they're all sold out already. But that'll be very interesting to see the outcome of that 7th birthday homebrew competition. Okay then, before we start to turn our attention to Siren, let's have a word from White Ribbon UK, our sponsor. White Ribbon is the UK's leading charity engaging men and boys to end violence against women and girls. Many women in the UK craft beer industry are experiencing this violence in many forms, including sexual assault, sexual harassment, sexism, and misogyny. It is not their problem to fix, it's the responsibility of us men. Me, you, your friends, your family. Here's White Ribbon trustee Dr. Stephen Burrell.
The fundamental idea is to get men to reflect on the role we can play in trying to prevent violence against women and girls in society from happening in the first place. Recognizing that we as men and boys actually have a really positive part to play in challenging that kind of violent and abusive behavior towards women, which we can see is still far too prevalent in society. But obviously there's lots and lots of men who would never dream of using any kind of violence, and therefore those of us who are totally opposed to this perhaps could and should be doing more to speak out about it. White Ribbon does provide an avenue in which men can do something about it and can play a positive role in being part of the solution.
So if you feel that you want to be part of that solution, head over to the White Ribbon UK website at www.whiteribbon.org.uk and make the White Ribbon promise never to use, excuse, or stay silent about men's violence against women. Maybe even sign up as an ambassador or a champion too. Let's help make the craft beer world a safe place for women. Okay, so before we welcome Darren to the show, we will have a look at some comments that were made on Twitter and Facebook in response to my question on both of those as to whether anybody had any comments about Siren or would like to suggest any beers to bring back, that kind of thing. We'll also listen to some SpeakPipe messages that have been left. So first of all, those comments. The lovely Charlie Bond via Twitter says, bring back Bloody Bring It On. Now, Charlie is the star of Power Tool Cheerleaders versus the boy band of the Screeching Dead and many other horror movies. So that beer itself was brewed by Siren in celebration of that movie. So Charlie would like to see that one back. Excellent. Jeff Burford via Facebook says, I wish they hadn't given Beer 52 their birthday beers and made them 330ml. Well, I know there isn't a lot of love for Beer 52 out there, but I believe Darren addresses the reason that they use Beer 52 in our chat. It's also worth noting there are lots of other birthday beers from Siren that are not in the Beer 52 box and are 440ml. Also, the beers that are available via Beer 52 are also available online from Siren while stocks last, of course, so you don't have to get them with a Beer 52 subscription. The one I drank and some few others that I have all came from Siren's online shop. Thanks for your input though, Jeff. Ger Samuel via Facebook said, my thoughts are best expressed in meme form. And he posts that along with a meme comprising of three frames from the film Marriage Story with star Adam Driver saying, every day I wake up waiting for Siren to rebrew Juice 'Em Up. So there you go, Ger wants Juice 'Em Up back. Okay, those are the comments. So now let's listen to the messages on the SpeakPipe. First up, we have Ken Barker, who is just starting out as a professional brewer with Berkshire's new startup, Mysterious Brewing.
Hiya, Paul. I heard you had a special guest this week, was Darren from Siren. So I thought I'd just call in and say, well, congratulations on 10 years and thank you very much for the inspirational beers you've been knocking out. You sponsored many a hangover and also inspired me and my business partner to start Mysterious Brewing not far from you. And yeah, keep up the good work. We'll continuously be down there drinking your beers from the tap room. And yeah, another 10 years of beer on you. Cheers.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for the message there. And Ken has been kind enough to send me four of Mysterious Brewing's new beers. So I'm really excited to give those a try. I'll let you all know what I think. And look out for later in the year, Ken and Mysterious Brewing will be guests on the podcast. And next to Middle Child, which we mentioned earlier on, with their new structure coming, Fraser Withers, he left a message too, and he had this to say.
My overriding memory of Siren, crikey, must be about 7-8 years ago. I was at the Fleet Beer Festival. I hadn't really paid much attention or really got to know anything about Siren at that point, but suddenly saw that there was a cask of Soundwave on at the fest, and I sat there and got half, and literally I did not move from that spot the whole evening. I was a bit of a mess at the end of it, but it was just such a good beer that I just could not put the thing down, and they've been one of my firm favourites ever since, and long may they continue.
Indeed, long may they continue. Right, last but by no means least, Elusive Brewing's Andy Parker, neighbour and good friend of Siren, said...
Hello, it's Andy from Elusive here. Just wanted to say a massive, massive happy 10th birthday to all of the team at Siren, and thank you for your huge support down the years. I remember when our last premises fell through just before we ended up in Finchampstead, and I found the units and remember speaking to Darren, asking if he'd mind if he had a neighbour. And of course, was very welcoming and has really looked after us ever since. And it's a fantastic business, and I wish you guys all the best. Cheers.
Right, fantastic. Thanks very much, Andy, and also to Fraser and Ken for leaving those messages for Siren. If you want to leave a message for Siren, for my next guest, Wiper and True, or about any of the podcast episodes, or maybe you just want to leave me a message, tell me what you're liking to drink at the moment, your favourite beers, or even ask me any questions, anything like that, then just go to my SpeakPipe account, and that's speakpipe.com/beerprime. Okay? And I'll be playing your messages on the next episode. Of course, if you've got a question and you leave me a message, but you want me not to actually play the voice message on the show, then you just have to say that. It's no problem. I'll just address your question. Okay, right. So we've left it long enough. You're here to listen to Darren of Siren. And by God, it's a brilliant, brilliant chat. I can tell you that. So here is Darren Anley of Siren Craft Brew. Hello, Darren. How are you?
Hello there. I'm good. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. No, not at all. Thank you for coming on. And it's congratulations on 10 years. It's your 10th birthday, 10th anniversary this year.
Absolutely. I know. Where did that time go?
I know. It's amazing, isn't it? It's quite a feat, but let's hope for many, many, many more.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to the beginning and let me ask you a few questions about how you started the brewery and also why. Why did you decide to get into brewing?
That's a great question. So when I think back on it, in the past, I'd had a number of businesses, generally all in IT, and the businesses I was involved with generally didn't actually make anything. We were buying other people's products, and potentially with some aspects, we were building our own services around it, but invariably it came around buying somebody else's product and selling that.
Yeah.
And I got out of that business in 2011. At the time, I've been a fan of beer my whole life, you know, probably longer than, you know, legally should have been allowed to. Brewdog got me into seeing it in a different way than we were traditionally used to in the UK. I mean, I was the kind of guy that walked into a pub and just picked up any of the random rotating cask pumps, because that was really how, you know, I get something new and different. And Brewdog brought a different vibe to that, and I really latched on to that. And about the time I sold my business, which was 2011, about 2010, there was a really nice explosion of breweries out there. Not an explosion, but a small growing. And I loved reading about them, hearing about them. There was a lot of long form content, these guys talking about what they were doing, why they were making certain choices, and I really loved that. And I wasn't really supposed to be starting another business. I mean, if I'm honest, my wife was, you know, very much looking forward to actually seeing a little bit of me. And maybe spending some time with the kids. But I just had an itch, and I really wanted to figure out whether I could make something, actually create something from scratch, from a perspective of a product, but also a brand and something that people cared about. And yeah. I was really excited about it. And that's really what hooked me in, if I'm honest, and got me started down this road.
Excellent. Okay. So obviously you've been a beer fan, but had you ever turned your hand to brewing?
Not until I sold my business, and then I got stuck into it, did loads of home brewing, went on a course, which was a bit of a mix of how to brew and also how to build a brewery. And so I learned lots of stuff from there, and then took that back and started brewing lots of stuff from home in my bathroom, filling bottles in the kitchen, you know, the kind of way everybody else goes about doing these things. So,
So. Excellent. Okay, but when you started Siren, you decided that you needed a head brewer, somebody with experience.
Yep.
And the first head brewer you had was Ryan Witter-Merritt here.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, that came about because, and I think this was in 2012, so the year before I started the business properly, I went out to the San Diego Craft Brewers Conference, and I kind of use that as a bit of a last minute, right, am I going to do this? So, you know, go and learn as much as I can, soak up the atmosphere, and really use it as a bit of a thing. Am I being sensible here? Is this something that I can really make a good go of? Obviously, I think in hindsight, it was a stupid thing, you know, going out to San Diego, drinking loads of great beers, talking to some amazing people and thinking I might come back and say no. You know, actually, in hindsight, that's probably a bit daft. But I've got two great bits of advice, and one of them was from a guy called Kelly Ryan, who was brewing head brewer, I think, on a dual role at Thornbridge at the time. And one of the bits of advice he gave me was, whatever you get a head brewer, get someone who knows what they're doing, can scale up the ideas that you've got, the stuff that you want to brew, and just knows how to do that on a bigger kit and clean it, and not go through the problems of scaling everything up and subjecting your customers to that. So yeah, he did a really good job for me, and give me that bit of advice, but then went on to actually put out a bit of a Twitter campaign for me, and said, you know, I've got this guy, he's looking to give free rein to someone, looking for creative, adventurous types, you know, who are happy living and dying by you know, their abilities, and it'll give a bit of free will to go and create what you want. So, and I got a load of people to talk to off the back of that. Ryan was one of them. We connected straight away. You know, he brewed some great beers. He was brewing at a small brewery in Denmark at the time. Part of what he did was also brewing some stuff for Michaela and Evil Twin at the time on their more kind of crazy stuff. So it was a great fit. And so to get him to come and join us was a great, great coup as a starting point. Super creative guy, not just in his recipes, but yeah, how to put the stories across that we wanted to put across. It was a brilliant first brewer to have.
Absolutely. And the first beer that you brewed under the Siren name was Maiden. It's famous. It's because it's now the first beer that you brew every single year.
Yep.
I must say, that's a very brave and bold choice of style, you know, barley wine for a first beer. I've talked to a lot of breweries, and you know, what was your first beer you brewed? Oh, it was this pale, it was that lager. So to brew a barley wine as your first, that's quite bold.
It is, isn't it? I think there are a couple of reasons for it. You know, some aspect of it is, a lot of what I wanted to do is build stories about what we do. So making it the first beer that we brew ever, and then the first beer of every year, I think there's a nice story element to that. But the real key part of it, and I'll come on to why barley wine in a minute, was, you know, I wanted it to be a statement. I wanted it to be a statement to both me and to Ryan, and then future people that come to join us, about, you know, this is what I want Siren to be about. I want to be about taking risks, being bold. We don't do things in the margins. We've got to go for it. If we feel that something's the right thing to do, Even if we don't know the outcome, and boy, we had no idea whether this was going to work, you know, we've got to go for it. And so, yeah, for me, that was a really important statement, I think, to make. And, you know, one, as I say, not just to Ryan, probably for myself as well, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, barley wine, we were talking about, well, if we're going to do this, let's make it something that could be an anniversary beer. What could that be? There weren't many people doing this kind of thing. I mean, Firestone Walker have a beer that they have for their anniversary, but they or it's a creation, but they take lots of different styles of beer that are in their barrel room, and they get other people from outside the brewery to come in and help and make a blend. But that could be everything from a quad to a barrel age. You know, it'll all be barrel aged, but it could be a quad or a stout or any sorts of other different things.
Mm.
We opted for a barley wine because I was a massive fan of the JW Lees beer, and I drunk plenty of those on a Sunday dinner with my girlfriend's mum's partner, and so kind of that's why we locked into that style. I love a barley wine, so. But yeah, no one was doing that sort of thing. No one was taking a barley wine and putting it into all these different barrels and hoping that in a year's time there might be something better than the sum of the parts. And yeah, it was a risk, but luckily it paid off.
It did indeed. And what you do these days, or probably from that day onwards, is you put some in barrels, and when you release a barley wine, it's blended with a little bit of fresh maiden, isn't it?
Yeah, so the intention was we brew a fresh batch. It may make it into the blend, it may not. And actually, to be honest, every year it has. I think it always forms anything from, I think probably, I'm guessing now because I can't actually remember, but I think the lowest is probably about 16%, 17%, somewhere in that region, up to as much as 30% or more. So so it generally has always formed a part of the basis, but it doesn't have to. It really is a case of, as we're playing with all the barrels that we've got, it's a case of what makes the best beer. And it just so happens that pretty much every year it has involved some of that fresh beer. We'll go into that. And then, yeah, we taste all the different barrels that we've got. Everybody splits off into different teams. Everybody makes their own blends. Then the teams will then vote on their own blends. And then each of the teams will then put each of their winners' blends forward. And then the company gets to pick overall. And what happens is, once we pick that, it will be a case of whatever beer we're taking out of barrels, even if it's we're using a whole barrel, we'll always leave 10% of that barrel in there and top that up from there. So it's kind of a bit like a Solera method. And so there's always some aged beer left in there to kickstart the process, or just act as some kind of blending agent right from the start. So.
Yeah. So as the years go on, you're just getting such a mishmash of things coming through the years. And I guess you're also blending, you know, you mentioned there about, you know, the teams looking and putting their blends together. They're barrels of, you know, that held different spirits over, you know, before you got hold of them, aren't they? So, you know, you'll have some rum barrels, some whiskey, some tequila. So there's so many different flavors going into that mix.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that that I love about Maiden is we're never trying to make sure, you know, that the blend is as the beers come out at that particular moment, as they present themselves from the barrel at that time. We're not trying to recreate a previous vintage or a previous blend or a flavor profile. We really are just saying, well, what are the flavors that we've got at this time? And what are we liking? What is really, you know, juicing us up for this particular moment? And yeah, that's part of the process of how we do it, because we do the blend in January, and each one of those barrels will have all been on a different path. You know, some of them could be, you know, we've still got barrel 001. I don't think we've got 001 actually. We've got 007. That's a great story, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've still got 007 in there. And, you know, obviously that's going to have a very different background for how many times it's been used. And the same for the bourbon barrels. We'll have some fresh ones. We'll have some that might have been sat there for 2 or 3 years that haven't been touched. So, It's such a real wide array of stuff to choose from and try and create something that's harmonious and better than the sum of its parts. So,
yeah, well, I mean, that certainly to me sounds like a great process to be involved in, sampling all those different barrels and choosing what to put together. But you must have great fun doing that.
Yeah, it's definitely a highlight of the calendar for some. Some not so much. There are definitely some people who have decided a day of barrel-aged barley wine drinking is not for them, and that's fine.
Yeah, you probably need 2 days off afterwards, don't you?
Yeah, we do it on a Friday.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, well, that's Maiden. So after Ryan, you had next up was Kyle Larson.
Yep.
And he has since gone on to set up Kings and Daughters.
Yeah.
And you've done a collaboration with them for, is it one of your 10 collabs for 10 years?
Or is it no, different this, one? This, yeah, this was for the project we've just done for Beer 52, actually.
Right, right. Okay. And that's called, the beer itself is called Dawn Chorus. And indeed, I've got a can of it right here. So
fantastic.
I'm just going to crack it open and give it a pour. But if you can tell us a little bit about Kyle's era at the brewery.
Yeah, sure, definitely. Well, I mean, actually, first things, I think, especially with it being today, I've got to give a massive shout out to Kyle. He's just picked up a bronze in the IPA category for the World Beer Cup today, which is just great stuff. Really pleased to hear from for his... is it Kings and Sons? I think it's Kings and Sons is the name. It's his soft IPA, and it's his only year-round beer, which is amazing. So to be able to put that into the World Beer Cup and come away with a great award like that, that's amazing. So
absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, Kyle joined us at a really fun time. I think, if I recall correctly, it was one of 2 days. We had a couple of weeks where we had some really nuts collabs going on. I think he came out actually... for his the day he landed in the UK, we literally he dragged himself over from the airplane, landed first thing in the morning, came straight out to us. We were collabing with Garage Project for one of our Rainbow Project collabs. Sat there throughout the whole day with us, you know, chatting, having obviously been out on the night flight for him over, and spent a great day with us. Came out with us till something like 3 a.m. in Reading as well. So. To be fair, I think that was actually the last time I ever saw him past about 10 o'clock at night, actually. But
oh, right. Okay. Or one-off.
Yeah, it was a one-off. But he definitely got stuck in right from an early age. But yeah, I mean, I think, one of the things that we've always been known for is being experimental, pushing the boundaries. And he'd written quite a lot of recipes for his previous brewery, which was Double Mountain out in the Hood River. But I think the sheer volume and the scope of how far he could push things definitely came as a bit of a surprise, and it took a bit of getting used to for him. But he handled it with aplomb, and it just really got stuck in. And I think I recall one of the last brews he did before he headed back to the US was we got a commission to do something with the Tate to highlight Van Gogh's exhibition that was running at the time. And sat down, talked about all sorts of different routes that we could take this beer. They wanted this beer to pair with stuff they were putting on in their canteen that was all going to be driven around Van Gogh ideas. I can't remember what sort of stuff they were going on about, but or what sort of stuff they were putting in for the food. But yeah, Kyle's idea was very broad brush stroke. So let's make a big fruited, heavy IPA. So lots of hops, tons of fruit to really, broad brush strokes. And one of the things also that Van Gogh used in pretty much all of his pictures of scenery, certainly, was cypress trees. Pretty much a little. So we also use cypress wood to add like a bit of vanillin and some tannin into the beer as well, which was, I think that's such a great expression of being creative and coming up with, quite an off-the-wall idea, I think.
Yeah, excellent. So this particular beer that you've done with him for the, as you say, the Beer 52 project, Dawn Chorus, I was quite interested to read about some of the science behind the brew. You said that it's a super clean drinking beer. It is. I can definitely attest to that. Boosted with aromazyme to help the yeast in biotransformation, which results in a crisp drink with bright modern hop aromas. So for anybody listening, and that includes me, that doesn't understand any of that, can you explain that to us?
Yeah. No, not really. I'll give it a go. I mean, the aromazyme isn't really about that crisp, dry profile. That's actually that's actually how we designed the beer. That was what Kyle wanted from that beer, was that, you know, crisp, dry finish. The aromazyme is really all about trying to activate some of the insides of the cells to release more aroma than you'd normally expect to get from a certain hopping rate. So I think that's probably pretty much it in its basic form. You add it in at an early stage, you dry hop while the product is in active fermentation. And there's this thing called biotransformation, which people are chasing, where the yeast activates onto compounds within the hops to create different oils, geranium, linalool, and citronella, like three of the main ones. And essentially what you're trying to do by getting this biotransformation in that early fermentation is to change how those compounds are released from the beer to express more aroma. And the aromazyme is supposed to boost that and help that. This is the first time we've used it. We're going to play with it some more to try and just see how it really does work. Obviously, when you've just used it once, it's always difficult to say, has it done what you wanted? Unless you're trying it again, you know, against a control substance, a control idea. So
yeah.
I think, you know, we'll probably look at playing around with using it in something like Lumina or something. So that way we've got a nice control to say, yeah, it did something, or actually, no, it didn't. So
yeah. Oh, it'd be interesting to see the outcome of that experiment.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So the current head brewer started in 2019 after Kyle went back to the States. And that is Sean Knight. So Sean's been in charge of your brewing ever since then. I'm interested, what do you find that each of them has brought to Siren over the years?
So that's a great question. And that's a really good question. I think for Ryan, it's a really easy there's a really easy answer for that one. You know, we're right in the early stages, there's literally me, him, and my dogs in the brewery, and he brought huge amounts of creativity. The fact that he's just got so many brews and experience behind him, that he's got so much stuff that he can lean on, so he knows where he can push and how to drive what he wants from the beer. I think by his own admission, and I think on a podcast, I seem to recall hearing him saying it once, that that next stage of then getting from a brewery doing, you know, three brews a week to then it growing to a team of two or three brewers, and the QC stuff and the paperwork that goes around that, the leadership and management things, those were not necessarily Ryan's comfortable spots. Administration definitely wasn't. You look at a brew sheet from now versus then, there's definitely a huge amount of difference. Kyle came in and was a great next segue from that to taking us on that next path. Really helped with a lot of the process work that needed to be undertaken. Really. Formalized, perhaps maybe professionalized is one of the words, and I think, Sean's just taking that next step forward there. One of Sean's great things, he's a fantastic engineer as well. So when you get to a brewery our size, whilst it's not what you want your head brewer to be doing, it's great that he knows how to, how to fix stuff, because there's always a need.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like the combination of the three of them have, along with obviously, everybody else, not saying that it's only the head brewer that does this, but they've sort of made Siren what it is from the it seems like one of those kind of, like a kind of a relay race, I guess. Yeah. You know, that each one has then passed the baton on to the next, and we're getting to the, you know, you always put your best ones last, I guess, and so you know you're sort of, you're improving. I'm not necessarily saying that you know one is better than the other.
Yeah.
Because, you know, well, let's not get into all of that. But you know, as the brewery gets bigger, you know, each head brewer has had to be able to take that on.
Yeah, there are different challenges at each stage, and it's required a different approach, a different mindset, and a different set of experiences for sure. To an extent, but as you, I think you rightly pointed out, there's a huge team, working with the head brewer, especially more so now, certainly than in Ryan's day. But even in Ryan's day, we had Gordon, who now brews up in Scotland, and with New Barns that he's started, and so every one of them has had some great people along the way to help them. Yeah. But each one's brought the right thing at the right time. We've been very lucky in that respect.
Absolutely. And I mean, what kind of sizes are we talking about? When you started, what was the size of the brew kit at that point?
Well, actually, we started with a 50 hect brew house.
So, really? Wow.
Yeah. I know. Well, again, funny enough, it goes back to that San Diego moment. I had another bit of advice from Jasper, who was a Camden, I say at the time. I don't think he is there now. I might be wrong. I don't know. But his advice to me was whatever size brew kit you're thinking of, double it. And if you can afford to, treble it. So we pretty much took him on his word at that. And so, we started off with a big kit. We were doing half brews for the first 6 months, I think, before we moved on to doing a full batch at a time. And we're still brewing with a 50 hect kit now, but we replaced it for more vessels. So we still got a 50 hect kit, although we actually get 60 out of it. And the kit's just changed, so we can now comfortably brew three times in a day, as opposed to very uncomfortably. If we really had to, we might have been able to just about squeeze two brews out of a very, very long day if we were lucky with our previous kit. So.
Okay, excellent. So I'm interested in it's a question I ask a lot of people. I'm interested in the name and where it came from. When you were sitting down, you decided to start the brewery, you probably had to brainstorm the name, or was it something that was just came straight to you?
No, I'd love to say it was something that just popped into heads, but it didn't. It took a lot of work, a lot of trying to figure out what are we trying to be, what we're trying to do. And it really came around just a bit of a route actually to get there. But I think it's actually quite a nice story. I mean, I think one of the things that I was really keen on, and this isn't putting BrewDog down at all, but in my eyes at the time in 2012, 2013, they had done an amazing job of waking everybody up to the fact that beer could be much more than we were perhaps seeing it at the time. And they had to do that by shouting a lot, and they were really good at it. And I think probably about 2011, they could have done a little bit less of that. And because they had a great platform. And so I was very conscious that actually what I wanted to do was build a brand that didn't do that. I wanted to start off by doing a lot of the same stuff they were doing, telling the stories, telling the reasons as to why we would, we'd done certain things, why things were important to us. So that was very much a really important part of what I wanted right from day one. And so I was talking to the lady who did a lot of the work with us on that brand development stuff and helping us come up with the logos and all that sort of stuff right from an early stage. And I was reminded about somebody, I can't remember who made the comment or who said it, but it was about brewing being really similar to music, in that you've got eight notes, but there are just so many ways of putting them together. You just get these infinite outcomes. And the brewing is really very, very similar in that respect. You've got four ingredients, although obviously we use a lot more than just those four ingredients. Yeah. But, you've got those four ingredients, and there are infinite ways of expressing that in the beer. So we were already talking about this this idea of music, and we were, how that might play into it. We were talking about singing, chorus, And then we got on to talking about sirens, because, you know, sirens, you know, singing. And then we just felt, actually, that's a great fit, because it also speaks to this other part of what I wanted the business to be about, which was tempting people in and you know, pulling people in rather than shouting at them. And that whole enticing piece fitted with Siren from there, and that's how we landed on it. And you know, I kind of feel like we got there all around the houses, but actually it feels like a really nice fit, and it still does, even 10 years from then, sorry, it feels like it's a nice fit for us.
Yeah, absolutely it is. The branding that you've got on your core beers at the moment, that's only fairly recently though, isn't it? Sort of, I think, what, 2019?
It is. It uses the original artwork from the original bottles. So the original, the siren, the face in the middle, that is still there to be seen in part of Soundwave, is in Calypso, Broken Dream. That's from the original artwork.
Right.
Whereas the original artwork was a diamond with almost like in the ingredients that you'd expect to find the flavour of that beer surrounding that image of the siren. We felt that was perhaps a little bit one-dimensional, and we wanted with the extra space you have on the can to, you know, use that to tell a bit more stories. So so we've kept part of it and then expanded on it from there.
No, it's true that cans definitely lend themselves much more to a big canvas for the artwork that bottles just didn't really.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Over the course of the 10 years that you've been going, you've implemented quite a few little projects along the way. I'll say little, actually some of them have been quite massive. The first one, and that was the brainchild of Ryan, was the Rainbow Project. So, I mean, tell us about that, because I was looking up about it when I was doing my research. I had heard of some of the Rainbow beers, but one thing I didn't realise is that Buxton and Omnipollo's Yellow Belly came out of that project.
That's definitely one of the real standout ones that everyone remembers. I think there's another one, but right now it's not coming to me. Can't remember whose it was, but yeah, absolutely. That was one of the projects we did right in our first year, and yeah, it was pretty inauspicious starting point, if I'm honest. I can't remember who were the first brewers we had. Hawkshead, the Colonel, Brodie's, us, Wild Beer involved, I think, for the first year. I think so. It wasn't Beavertown for the first year. That's a long time ago. Can't remember.
The
idea was, you know, it remained the same apart from the first year. It was just each brewery, we put a colour out of the hat. We had to brew a beer inspired by the colour. And, you know, the key part of that being the story around the beer is going to be inspired, not the beer has to be that colour, you know?
I mean, with some of those colours in the rainbow, you wouldn't really want a beer those colours, would you?
No, and I do recall that there was a beer in that first year that was a little bit of a last minute addition for somebody, and literally dyed it green.
Oh right, okay.
Just before it got served, yeah. But it was all done in it was all served at the first batch that we did was. Oh God, I can't remember the name of the pub now. That's terrible. But
I think it was the King William IV.
It was indeed. The one. Yeah, that's it. So, and then the second year, the brewers changed around a bit, and then we moved it up a bit with bringing in an international brewer. So I think the first year was Europe, and then after that, we went to the States, and then we did New Zealand, and then it was quite a mismatch for the last couple of years, I think. So.
And then in 2019, you handed the reins over to Left Handed Giant.
Absolutely, and they gave it a go, and then obviously, unfortunately, the next year.
Well,
we won't be talking about 2020, will we, today?
No, probably not. Well, I mean, we might come on to some things that happened during that time, maybe, because, you know, actually, you guys did during the pandemic. You didn't sort of just sit back and think, well, let's let this thing pass us by. You grabbed everything by the horns. You did some great things. We're talking about the festivals, and you know, obviously, we've recently had the 10th birthday event, the 10th birthday celebration festival over at the Tap Yard, which I attended, which was absolutely awesome. Really good. Really enjoyed it. But there's been some others in the past as well, and during the course of those pandemic years, you had a couple of festivals: the Grateful Eight, which was your 8th birthday festival. And the Project Barista festival as well later that year in 2021. But what I find is you took the format that was there for you for Grateful Eight, which was, of course, an online festival, and really, really ran with it, because it's so easy to sort of do it half-hearted and just sort of say, well, you know, here's the beers we're going to send out and we'll do a little bit of a YouTube video for people to drink along to at their pace. But you really, really went all in on the format. And I have to say, it was absolutely incredible. I like being there in person, but I enjoyed that almost as much as the in-person ones. So what was the thought process behind that? Obviously, to make sure that you could get as many people in as you could, but how did it all get worked out?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you said, we wanted to go further. And it kind of stems from, you know, one of our values is about being bold and adventurous. And it wasn't a case of, you know, we never ever want to think, well, we can get away with it, you know, just doing this or that or whatever. And we had done plenty of online, you know, drink-alongs and stuff like that, where and they worked really, really well. But we thought, if we want to try and find a way of doing a mini festival, Let's really go for it. Let's put some proper not put some proper effort into, because that sounds like, you know, anybody else who didn't do it, you know. But let's really go for it. Let's see if we can find a way of mimicking as best as we can the experience you'd have in a festival. So yeah, we did a lot of digging around, and we found there were a number of platforms that we could use that would give us essentially three stages. So that meant we could run three lots of content all at the same time. You had the ability, although I don't think many people used it, but if you wanted to go off into your own little chat room with a bunch of your mates, you know, that was all there for you to be able to do. So kind of trying to mimic that whole idea of, you know, what do you like about going to a festival? You know, obviously drinking a beer is part of it, but yeah, you want to be there with your mates. So we put that as part of it as well. So, and then we thought, well, if we've got whatever it was, I can't even remember how long we ran it for, but I think it was quite a while. I think it was probably from around about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon to about 10. On three separate channels, you know, what are we going to do to create some cool content? And so we just went for it and just put loads of effort into it, and it was just great. It was really one of the things I'm most proud about.
Yeah, and no, it was absolutely. I still remember it quite clearly, actually. And you know, you had the drink alongs, you had tastings, had interviews with various people. You had Melissa Cole doing the burger.
The Patty Man burger. Absolutely. Yeah, that's
which I ordered, because you could order the pack with or without the burger.
Right.
And I ordered it with, I do love a burger, and I ordered it with, and it was really nice actually to get, coming back to the most recent 10th anniversary festival, it was really nice to get an original Patty Man burger from them that I didn't have to cook.
Yeah, brilliant.
but no, it was. I thought it was a very interesting festival. And then later in the year, you did the Project Barista, which I think is a project that had been going on for some years already.
Yeah,
but it was the first time that you did a festival, and that was more of the hybrid. So by that time, some people were, I think, still allowed outside. I can't remember what the rules were at the time now, but that was a more hybrid one. And I did the online version, mainly actually not because I didn't want to come out and mix with people. I was hoping to do that, but I just couldn't make it over your way. So I just did the online version. But I mean, there were some interesting beers in that one. I don't think I've actually had any of the previous Project Barista beers.
Right.
If I'm honest, so the ones that I've had from you have been for that 2021 festival. There were some interesting beers, because they obviously all had coffee in, and you know, it'd be very easy to just do four different kind of stouts with coffee. But you did a Gosa as one of them. That was really interesting. I have to be honest, it was one that I was very interested in drinking. I don't think I would have bought it again, but that's because I'm not actually that much of a sour fan. But it was, let's put it this way, I did drink it all. There was no sink pouring at all. I did drink it all. It was a very interesting beer. I don't think I've ever had that kind of style beer with coffee in it.
Right. I mean, so I can't remember how many times we've run that project. I think we're up to maybe four or five times we've run that project. Mm. And we always joke about it internally, being it's the beer festival that no one ever knew they wanted, and but people do love it. There's definitely a Marmite aspect to it. There's definitely a point where some people say, well, I don't like what you did there, or actually coffee beers aren't for me. And do you know what? I'm comfortable with that. We've always been comfortable with that. I think, like I said earlier, we're not about trying to brew by committee, and we're not trying to do flavors to appeal to, we want to make what we feel is something that's really interesting, really stand out, and it represents what we want it to be. And Project Barista is definitely that. And I totally get that it's not everybody's thing. Mm. But yeah, I mean, we did a Negroni sour once. We've got a ristretto Negroni, which is actually there's a coffee version of a Negroni, which is where we kind of stole the idea from, put it into a sour. But we've done all sorts of other bits, double iced lattes, which will be a little bit more traditional and expected sort of thing. Coffee dark lagers and all sorts.
Excellent. Have we seen the end of Project Barista, or is it going to come back?
I think it will come back. Yeah, absolutely. I think it probably would have made a return this year. We generally look around about a year, 2 years gap between them. But I think we've just got too many fun stuff to be thinking about doing this year. So it's probably going to go back to next year.
Okay. We will get onto all that fun stuff for this year.
Fantastic.
But first of all, I want to go back again a little bit. And that was to the Time Hops Festival. A lot of festivals, festivals that are run by the breweries rather than, the kind of London craft beer festivals and those kind of ones. But a lot of breweries running their own festival, as you've done on many occasions yourself as well, is run them at your own premises, your tap yards. But for Time Hops, you used one of the venues at the University of Reading. And I think it worked amazing. It was so good because there was such a lot of space to branch out. You had your different bars with different beers. And then the main stage where you had the talks and the film that Johnny and Brad from the Craft Beer Channel did was just incredible. I just enjoyed that. The four Time Hops beers as well were just absolutely fantastic. Really enjoyed all of those. But I just think it was, for me, it's certainly one of the best beer festivals that I've ever attended. Well run. When I think back on the festivals, I'm thinking, to your 10th birthday festival recently, the Time Hops, the Grateful Eight, the Project Barista, all of these things, whether they be either in person or online, it seems that you guys have got a great team that organise these things, because that's not easy to pull those things together in the way that you've done.
No, absolutely. Yeah, definitely not. It's a lot of work that goes into it, we've got a great team. To put it together. I mean, Andy's been the backbone of our marketing team for a very long time. Which is, I think, when he actually started. I think it's definitely 8 years, might even be nine, and I feel really bad the fact that I'm not sure 100% on that one. I'm sure I'll get a kick in for that afterwards. But he has been the fulcrum of all of those events right from day one. So he's got a great understanding of what we want from trying to do, how can we make our mark and make an impact in those right down to the more, the nuts and bolts of what has to happen to make sure that, stuff doesn't get tripped over and stuff runs and as smoothly as possible, as best as you can. These things are always a bit of a challenge, and something always pops up out of the works. We've got a great team that really helped put those things together for sure. So Time Hops was a great festival. The venue was amazing. We actually did it because we were going to do it in 2020, actually, off the back of we were going to do our crowdfunded investors. We were going to do an annual event for them. And we were a bit nervous that with the amount of people that could come to that, that we might not be able to do it properly at the brewery. So that's why we ended up doing it there, with the idea of then we'd knock a festival onto the next day, so we'd have the investor there on Friday and the festival on a Saturday, and it worked really well. It worked really, really well. So I dare say we'll probably be heading back there at some point for doing it again.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense for such a larger scale event that you need to do, that you don't perhaps have the room at your own premises.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and Time Horse was a great thing to be involved with. Loved that. Loved the storytelling part of that. It really went back to certainly a lot of my early days in getting excited about beers, talking to some of the brewers that made some of those beers, and finding out from them how they teased the most amount of flavor out of some of those some of those hops, and some of those, in some cases, some very basic equipment. And we got some great help. So Sierra Nevada was just unbelievable. Scott, who's the head brewer there, was just gave us so much time. Yeah. And obviously, we had the OG actually on our video as well, which was great to see. So
yeah. Did you find that some of them were not necessarily fully forthcoming with their tips? Maybe holding a few things back.
In some cases. But no, not really. I mean, yeah, I think one of the brews that we did, the guys there were just too busy, and they said that right from day one to really help us out with that, which was a shame. But in fairness, there's so much information about how they brew their beers, and that particular beer that we were brewing. We got some great stuff from John from The Alchemist, which was amazing. He wouldn't give us nuts and bolts details of his water profile, but I'm not going to blame him for that. There's some of the stuff that he did talk about as being part of the heart of how he approaches that beer, which was just phenomenal. Really great to share that kind of information.
I really did enjoy that documentary. I think Craft Beer Channel did a great job on that.
They did absolutely, and in true all of us fashion, they did that with very short time scale.
Yes, I did. I did hear about that. I did hear it's quite. But hey, sometimes people work best under pressure.
Absolutely, yeah. One of the beers we put out for our Beer 52 project was called Activate Deadline Mode, and that's for a damn good reason.
yes, indeed. Right. Okay. So We did say that we may not talk about 2020, but I did have one thing to ask you, because I've spoken with a lot of breweries who were only just starting up at the time, and obviously it was a challenge to them because they had to pivot and adapt almost immediately. However, I can't help thinking that actually it must have been just as tough for established breweries like yourselves. I mean, you'd kind of grown to a certain point, probably made a lot of investments because things were going good. Certainly by this time you were on the cusp of 7-8 years old. And all of a sudden this hits. It must have been some nervy and worrying moments, even for a big brewery like yourselves.
I think it's really, I think across the board for everybody, I think we all viewed it with the same amount of dread and worry and panic. And I think small, big, I don't think it really changed it for anyone. We're all thinking, what the hell, how do we get out of this? I know plenty of brewers that had made some significant investments just at that point, and then weren't able to turn the kit on and all sorts of stuff like that, which has been so hard for those guys. I mean, for us, we were in a position where I think, we had 19 tanks full of beer. We had a warehouse full of about 350, 400 grams worth of packed beer, predominantly in kegs, because most of our beer was, it goes out in keg and cask. We were owed best part of 750 odd grand from our age debtors list at the time. It was it was worrying for everybody on every scale, you know, small, big. I think it was, what the hell, how are we going to get through this? And I try not to think too much about it. I mean, I'm pleased with how we did come through it. And, you know, and I think our attitude and our approach to again, being bold, being adventurous did help us for sure. We worked really hard to try and make sure we were working with the people that were open. So the bottle shops that were open, the small independents that were trying to do something, pivot, as you said. You know, we worked really hard to make sure that, you know, we had stuff for them to get involved with. It wasn't just about us doing it, you know, ourselves, and trying to make sure we retained all the money, you know, so it was all the margin and everything. So, but yeah, it was a pretty tough time.
Okay. As we've said before, this is your 10th year. So you must have seen the industry change a fair amount over that time. How has it changed in your 10 years?
How has it changed? That's a really good question, actually. I mean, it's changed a lot in that there's clearly a lot more brewers. So, yeah, that's definitely a thing that has added some challenge for everybody. There are definitely a lot of brewers for customers to choose from. I think it's really hard to pick a couple of areas where you say these are the changes, because I think at the moment we're still working through what the changes of the pandemic have actually, what have they had on people and their buying habits. And that's the bit that at the moment that I would say for the last year and a half, 2 years, has been really hard to try and figure out. So I think during the pandemic, you had a lot of people were being fantastic with their attitude towards the small independents, and were really doing everything they can to support that. And obviously, and really since that time and the world started to get back to normal, that's definitely dropped off a cliff. And I think, part of that is, their attention is now much, because, they're out and about again. They've got less time to look at the, all the things that are going on in the industry, and their attention is far more divided. Is definitely a thing.
Yeah.
I think obviously the cost of living impact is a thing there as well, in that they're being much more careful and cautious about where they're spending their money. But I think that's one of the things that it's just really hard to understand, where you need to be playing and how to do it, and what you need to be doing for customers. So we keep trying to, we keep doing what we do. We keep playing, we keep pushing, keep putting out interesting things that we're interested in, and it's a real difficult balance of trying to find where that. Even to the point of where that split in pack should be. So, because we were bottles when everyone else was going cans, by the time we got our canning line, we were probably 80% on trade and 20% went to retail. We started to shift that into a much more industry standard. I don't know whether that's the right word, but, maybe 60-40.
Yeah.
Some breweries probably at the 50-50 mark. But at the moment, it's definitely much more like 70-30. So the on-trade is definitely picking up the slack. I think a lot of the independents are, from a bottle shop perspective, are struggling at the moment. So, I think from that perspective, it's just hard to see where the industry is going. Mm. But I think, the thing that stayed the same is people still like what I think we do. They're like having an appreciation of of the story behind why we'll do the things that we do. They like knowing that they're dealing with an independent company that and all of the stuff that goes around that. So I think that's still there, and I think that's still important for this industry. May it continue.
Absolutely. And of course, it's very important to have a route to market. Obviously, you've got a lot of pubs that take your casks and your kegs, but it also really, really helps when you've got your own outlets. Of course, you've got your tap yard.
Yeah.
But you've also got a pub.
We do. Yes. We do. During the pandemic, a pub that's really close to where I live, and is a pub that, whilst it's probably 10 miles from where I grew up, so it was never my local, it used to be a pub I'd go to fairly frequently with my mates. I have no idea why. It was this 16th, 17th century little boozer, and really even back in 87, 88, I wouldn't say it was the most, lovely looking place, but we used to go there all the time. And so it came up on the market, and it's a free house, something so rare in this area. Pretty much Breakspears own most of the pubs in our area, and if it's not, then it's not an Enterprise Inns these days. It'll be a Stonegate or one of the other Tide outlets. So to be able to get something that has a history as a free house was really, really interesting and exciting. So we've got that. It's a country pub, about as far different to what you'd expect for a brewery like Siren to be buying, but I quite like that juxtaposition. I like to and there's a lot of work to be done with it, but I think I think it's a good addition to what we do, and I think it'll definitely be a good long term part of our business.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's called the Georgian Dragon.
It is Georgian Dragon.
What's the area?
Swallowfield. Yeah, it's literally about 3 miles from the brewery, so it's not far.
Excellent, excellent. Okay. I am going to come on to something else, but I'm just going to take a quick break to open up another BS.
Okay.
And this is your collaboration with Track called Doing Science.
Great name.
Great name indeed. Absolutely.
Doing and, Science.
So is this one of the 10 collabs for 10 years?
It is, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We brew with Track a couple of times, once at ours and then once at theirs. I think in Kyle's day, actually, just before Kyle headed back off to the States. So, they were one of the guys we desperately wanted to brew again with this year. So great, great to have them down. They're one of the 10 from 10.
Excellent. We'll get onto all of those things because I love the I love all of the kind of different things that you're doing, all based around the number 10 mainly. But we are talking about outlets for your beer that you control. So the Tap Yard, the Georgian Dragon, I believe you've got something else coming up. Quite exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Technically, I probably shouldn't still be talking about it because still haven't actually signed the lease, but it won't be. Probably by the time you put this out, it will have been done. But yeah, we've got a great spot in Reading Town Centre. We're looking at putting a 4,000 square foot tap room in there with great food. Haven't quite finalised the concept of that, but it'll be a street food led idea, and 28 taps, two tank beers as well. The design work looks amazing. It looks fantastic. It's part of the Station Hill project that's going up, so there'll be a huge amount of development work going on there. Loads of residentials above it, right opposite the station. And then loads of office blocks going around it as well. So should be really exciting.
Yeah, excellent. And is that the same station where the Elizabeth line comes into as well?
It is. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Yeah. So no excuses for not coming to see Siren anymore when it's saying in London. You just indeed. Jump on the Paddington to Reading in beer in 20, 35 minutes or whatever it is,
exactly,
or get the Elizabeth line and
Yeah. Perfect, perfect. So any timescales on when you hope to have that open?
Yeah, I think we are looking at probably back end of August, beginning of September is quite likely.
Right, okay, well.
So mind you, there's a lot to be done. So I think we could take that with a pinch of salt, but that's absolutely what we're going to drive towards.
And I understand, is there a crowdfunder for that?
We will be. Yeah, I don't think we've got a date for when that's going to go live yet, but absolutely, yeah, we were going to be doing a crowdfunder, so it will be a case of cash for money in advance, sort of things that we'll be doing for that, and there'll be some really cool little ideas around extra bonuses for putting in certain amounts of money. So
yeah,
should be exciting.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to that as well. Right, so, okay, we've skirted around it quite a lot. We're going to come on now to the 10-year plans. Your 10th anniversary year plans. We've mentioned it a few times, 10 collabs for 10 years. Yeah. Although, I don't know, maybe I'm reading it wrong. Is there actually 20 collabs? Because is it 10 home and 10 away?
It's highly likely that there are going to be more collabs. You know, we've already done, I think I can't remember how many we did for the Beer 52 box, but yeah, there was a bunch there already. But yeah, is it highly likely that there'll be more than 10? I mean, we're definitely doing a home and away with Track. We just did a beer with Verdon not that long ago. It comes out this week, I think, actually. Might be this week. And there'll be a home brew with them as well. Yeah, there's quite a few others in the
Is that what you tried to do? Rather than sort of go away for 10 and home for 10, you tried to sort of get 10 breweries and do a home and away with each one?
That was the idea. There's a few that can't do that. They either can't fit in at home with them, or they just, you know, the schedule didn't work for both ways. But that was what we were hoping to try and achieve. So yeah. I think we're really focusing on 10 collabs at our place. So
yeah, okay, excellent. So I take it that we're drinking one of the Track ones right now. They're not all been done or come out yet. This is all across the whole of the year.
It'll be across the whole of the year, absolutely. So there's still a lot to come. A lot is still being finalized at the moment, so I couldn't give you a huge amount more info about that one, to be honest. But there'll be 10 great breweries that we want to work with, and each one is hopefully something that people get excited about. So
well, we'll look forward to that. I mean, you know, finding new breweries, not that you have to, you mentioned having brewed with Track before, and I'm sure a lot of the breweries that you're brewing, you know, these 10 beers, you know, you've brewed with before as well. But in the little booklet that I somehow, given how drunk I was, still managed to keep from the 10th birthday festival, you got a little page on there with all of the collabs. Well, there is a disclaimer at the bottom that you might have forgotten one or two. But right. Generally, the collabs that you've done over the 10 years, and I counted 113 breweries and 41 other enterprises, you know, bars, pubs, writers, coffee roasters, publications, you know, maltsters, all that kind of stuff. So 154 or so, obviously some more. Now, of course, some are in far-flung places. I know that you brewed in New York, didn't you, with Other Half?
Yeah.
And some of them not so far, like across the yard with Elusive.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I won't ask you to pick out any highlights from those 144, because I'm sure that there are many, but also I'm sure you don't want to single somebody out. What I do want to ask you is if anybody has slipped through the net, who are you desperate to have brewed with? You still haven't, from one reason or another.
Do you know what? I think there are so many breweries that we still haven't reached out to. I'd absolutely dearly love to do something with John from Alchemist. I'd love to do something with Sierra Nevada. That'd be an amazing thing to do. There's a whole host that I would say that could fit that list. That's the challenge, you know, when you start looking at it, it's like, there's just so many people, you know, that we could prove it. And I love collab days. There's still, you know, I know some people have viewed them as it's just a marketing exercise, but yeah. For me, they're absolutely not. When we do a collab, it's about getting them down, sharing time with them. Mm. Sometimes you don't necessarily learn much in the recipe creation. Not it doesn't happen every time, but I can honestly say every time we've had somebody down, we've learned something throughout the day. But just by chatting with them, there'll always be some nuggets of information. And also sometimes it's actually just great to have somebody else go through some of the same challenges as you do, and it just helps you come away feeling more energized. And you know, so it's the collabs for me. They're one of the favorite parts of of what we do. I love love doing collabs. It's such a an unusual thing to do, you know, when you're talking about people that, you know, not competing businesses, but, you know, everybody else you talk to outside of the industry says, yeah, but you compete with them. I mean, it doesn't feel like that. But, yeah, it's a very
odd thing. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. It does sound counterintuitive to be collabing with breweries that are in the same industry as you, and even in, you know, we mentioned Elusive, even in that case, being so close to you, you know, it'd be in a lot of other industries, it would be a case of, what, we've got another brewery on the same industrial estate as us. That can't work, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, not another brewery. You know, looking at a different industry, like, you know, cafes, for example. You know, if another cafe opened up around the corner, they'd be seething.
For sure,
taking their business away. But it just doesn't seem like that in the craft beer world, and not only doesn't seem, it just isn't like that in the craft beer industry, which is amazing. And, you know, I say it time and time again, but, you know, it's because it's one of the things that I find so incredible and so amazing about this industry is how everybody just gets on. And, you know, on that subject and on the subject of Elusive, you guys seem to have a lovely relationship.
Who can't have a great relationship with Andy?
Fair point.
The nicest man in brewing. But Andy actually came to our original launch at Craft Beer Co. in Clerkenwell 10 years ago. And I knew of him only through the fact that I've been following him for ages as Tabamatu on Twitter. So it was actually really quite, I know this guy. And then, you know, when he came to our tap takeover or our launch for, and it was, yeah, oh, look, I know him. That's really fine. I loved him. Oh, dear, that's, you know.
Yeah.
He's famous.
Excellent.
Yeah, but no, he's great. He's such a lovely guy to chat to, and we get on.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, later this month they're celebrating their 7th birthday. So they're only a few years behind you.
Yeah, absolutely. I that's actually feels a bit nuts, to be honest. That's, you know, that he's seven years.
Mm.
Yeah, 7 years he's been in that unit. So yeah, it's crazy how time has flown.
Yes, no, absolutely is. Right, okay, so this Doing Science that I'm drinking, your collaboration with Track, you've got the first ever Strata CGX hops in Europe, which, as I understand, is a new cryogenic concentrated lupulin form.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's exciting to get the first. Please do.
So, I mean, essentially, it's an advanced hop product. So, if anyone knows what cryo is, it's exactly the same as that, which is when they make the hop pellets, I'm not sure the exact process for CGX, but with a cryo hop, they'll freeze it and they'll get rid of a lot of the green material. The idea being that you're preserving more oils for the mass that you're putting in. You'll lose less beer. You'll get more concentrated flavors coming out of it. So CGX is Crosby Hops, their version of what is a cryo hop. It's not done exactly the same way. They've got their own process for doing it, and yet we were lucky enough to get the first batch of it into the UK, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's tasting gorgeous, really lovely, really smooth, eminently drinkable. I'm going through this can in no time at all. Right, so the 10 year plans again. So you've got 10 charities.
Over the last 3 or 4 years, we've really started to ramp up our efforts on that front. It was always a part of the business. It was always an aspect that I wanted to be, you know, heavily involved with, whether it's local community charities or wider charities. I wanted to make sure that we had had something and we're giving back in some way, shape or form. And we've been ramping up every year. I think a highlight for us last year, I mean, I say highlight, it's not a highlight, but in terms of the money and the amount of the effort that our customer base got in behind it was phenomenal. So we did a Mavka, which was a beer that we did with a Ukrainian brewery when the war kicked off. we brewed it, brewed the beer, put it into tank, and every single penny of the sale went to the charity that Vava were asking people to put their money to. So I think it was all in all, it was about 19 grand. And I think outside of that, we probably raised another 15, I think, grand throughout the year for various different projects. So we thought this year we want to take a next step. So we're in the process of working through identifying 10 charities, and throughout the year we'll have various opportunities for us to raise some funds for those charities. We've already done 4. I'm just trying to remember which ones we've done. We did Dingley's Promise, which is a local charity that supports special needs kids in their really early, and the parents in their really early stages. Yeah. Going to school. And then we've recently done one for Autism Awareness Week as well, which is something we've done recently. We're about to run a bar at a race called Endure 24, mm-hmm. which I'm really excited about. It's a 24-hour running race, and you enter as a team, and you can have anything from as little as one person up to a maximum of 12, yeah. and run a relay constantly for 24 hours. So we're running the bar in this. It's a highly sociable event, and there's going to be a big siren bar right in the middle for the campers and the supporters and the team members and stuff like that. But we're also going to put our own team together as well. I'm hoping that we can get close to 12, because I haven't actually put on my running shoes for a very long time. And they're raising their key charity is Alzheimer's, which is one of the ones that I put down for us to support this year. So that's obviously a natural one for us. And then we'll probably tag something else alongside it for this year. But yeah, look out for some requests for sponsoring some nutters to do a 24-hour race.
Yeah,
raising some money for some good fun charities.
Absolutely. I mean, you're saying about how you can have 1 to 12. I don't think you'd want one, would you? Because
JD,
on their own, 24 hours.
Yeah, I've got JD, one of our guys who recently joined us. He swears he could do the whole thing if we wanted him to. He's done it before. I don't know. I must
on his own.
I don't know whether he's done it the whole thing on his own before. But
wow,
he said he would do it. And do you know what? He's a very, very driven young man. I'm pretty sure if he says he'd do it, he's going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I look forward to you talking about that, especially as you say, if you can get at least 11 others to join you. I look forward to that. Sure. Right. Okay. I want to talk about some of your older beers as well, because you've got bring back campaigns, and I know that at the 10th anniversary, Liquid Mistress was pouring, so that's one of the beers.
Yeah.
Is it 10 beers that you're bringing back?
I have to consult the notes on that one. I think it is, actually. I think that there is I'm not sure whether actually it is 10. That feels like a lot for me.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it would fit in with all the other 10 of this and 10 of that, but...
it's definitely a case of,
But it is a bit optimistic.
How much can we squeeze out of 10?
Yeah.
I think what we're working on at the moment is... there'll be a customer poll, so going out directly to consumers. At some point, we'll be asking them. We've already done an internal bring back, so we've already done a poll internally for what beer we're going to bring back. So that is actually in tank as we speak. We're just about to go out to bottle shops. That's going to be our first one where we're going to go out to customers. So we're going to go out to our bottle shops specifically and ask them. Give them some choices of what beer they'd like to see back, and we'll do the same for the on trade, and then direct to consumers as well. So,
excellent.
I think that's probably about where that. I don't think we're doing 10.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is quite a lot, of them. But it'd be interesting to see what beers get chosen to bring back.
Definitely.
And give them a try.
What would you pick?
Oh, origin story.
Okay.
I know it's not that old. It's not a massively old one, but I really did enjoy that.
Right.
That was awesome.
Excellent.
Well, actually, talking about bringing things back, but you know, I don't know what the status of this is, but one of the series of beers that you do that I'm a massive fan of are the Caribbean Chocolate Cake series.
Yes.
Now, obviously, you started that off with a collab. It all started with that collab with Cigar City.
Yeah.
And then you started bringing out variations, you know, Death by Chocolate Cake and, you know, all these kind of things. Now, last year, towards the end of the year, you threw a curveball and slightly changed them. And the CCC, instead of being Caribbean Chocolate Cake, were three beers, Curiosity, Candor and Charm. And then a fourth, Crescendo, which I understand was a kind of blend of all three of those. So what I want to know, are we going to see the original format of Caribbean Chocolate Cake back? Was it just taking a little bit of a break?
I don't think I'll be giving away too many
plans.
I was to say, if I was to tell you. But yeah, this year we will be seeing Caribbean Chocolate Cake coming back in a similar format to how we've done it in the past.
Okay, so, fantastic.
Yeah, we fancy the idea of giving it a little bit of room to breathe and come back again next year. And in some respects, we are definitely seeing comments where some people have been very upset about it. And you know, they see that period of time as the signing in the way to Christmas.
Yeah,
and you know what? That's wonderful. That's so lovely that you
it's
know,
a tradition.
You get those comments exactly. So Caribbean Chocolate Cake will be coming back this year.
Wonderful. That's very good news. And one of your other series that you do, Suspended In series.
Suspended In was the idea of trying to play around with try and do something where you're going to get the opportunity to play with hops in a way that when you're brewing production beers, you don't get the chance to do very often. So we've pretty much now at this point, in the early days, we were playing a lot with the malt base and the water profile and what have you. I think we're pretty much settled. On occasion, we'll tweak it up a little bit, but we're now settled on a malt base. And it's a 4% hazy, soft mouthfeel IPA. And it just gives us a great way of getting the brewers to play with different hops, with different ways of hopping and different combinations. And it's... you know, we did have a period where I think we were trying to be a little bit too clever, where we would do a batch every month, and then which would use the same hops but in different quantities, yeah,
right.
For each
okay.
one,
yeah.
and then we brew an actual proper IPA about 6-7% for the end of that quarter, and then the next quarter we start again. But that all got really confusing, so we stopped doing that and we just do Suspended, and it just gets given a name based on the one of the lead hops that we'll use. So
right, yeah, okay, excellent. And of course, yeah, we've talked about a lot of your the specials and seasonal beers, but of course you've got a great core range as well. You've got Soundwave, Yulu, Calypso, Lumina, which I think that's the newest edition, isn't it? Even though it's a few years old now,
it is.
And Broken Dream, one of my personal favourites, Champion Beer of Britain 2018.
Absolutely, yeah.
That must have been great, getting that accolade.
It was. It was quite the shock at the time, if I'm honest. So, I didn't really understand how the voting went, and I didn't realise that when they were announcing who the winners of the stouts, that ours wasn't even in there for that, because it was in a different voting category. So when we actually got nominated as the winner, it was a bit of a surprise, but yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, what a great thing for that beer. I mean, it's a fantastic beer. It's one of the first beers that we ever produced out of our what do we have? Undercurrent, Soundwave, Liquid Mistress, and Broken Dream. They were our four core beers that we started off with. So
yeah,
it's hardly changed at all as a recipe. We played around with the coffee in the early days, made a couple of tiny tweaks, but you know what? It's still largely the same recipe. You know, there's very little difference to those early days.
Yeah. And of course, you do the like amped up Shattered Dream.
But
I love the Nitro, and we'll get onto Nitro now. The hard pour Broken Dream. And we'll talk a little bit about Nitro, but what gets me is, it may well be that I'm just not looking at the same channels as other people, perhaps, but a lot of people are going on about and Sebastian Hobday's London Black. Personally, I love that. Beautiful beer. And BrewDog's offering to go up against Guinness. Nobody seems to mention Broken Dream, the hardcore Broken Dream as going up. That's a, I mean, maybe it's not quite exactly like it, but you know, that's a nitro stout. And I, you know, I think it deserves its place in that discourse about, you know, beers that going up against Guinness. And I think actually, I think you guys were doing the hardcore Broken Dream before London Black and Black Heart came out.
We were definitely doing it in Nitro before the guys at Anspach and Obday. Yeah. BrewDog did have a Nitro version of a can prior to us, which was jet black. It used to be canned in the States, but they pulled it, I think, around the same time as we launched ours. And then obviously they've now gone back to it. But yeah, I mean, look, it's we don't put it on tap in Nitro. We never got to that point of figuring that out.
It's only nitro in cans.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we experimented a couple of times and we found it quite challenging with the education for the for bars to do it well. So we backed away from that and just left just kept it in cans. But yeah, I think as you say, it's a very different beer as well. You know, it's not a it's a 6.5% with lactose with coffee.
Yeah,
it's a big beer, you know, and it's it's definitely not a Guinness replacement.
It's not a 4.2. No,
not a 4.2. I mean, certainly in the case of Guinness, with not much to really talk about from a flavour profile, but you know, you can drink it very quickly and easily.
But you know, you played around with Nitro, haven't you? You've used it in several other beers as well. I think I had the Cold Hearted.
Okay.
That was an interesting beer in Nitro. Right. Really, really nice.
Yeah, I think Nitro is great, and we've played around with it in a few areas. We actually do Nitro Memento, which is our best bitter that we originally did just so we could have a bitter cask at the pub, and we put that out in Nitro cans, and actually, whenever we put it into cans, it goes really, really well. People love it. So. That's good to see. We put it into a sour before to trial it, and I think that worked quite well. Very mixed results, if I'm honest, but I thought it worked quite well. I think one of the challenges, I really wanted to try it, and we did a beer called $10 Shake, which was a play on the $5 Shake conversation in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
and the original beer was. A really, you know, robust bitter IPA layered with a chunk, massive lashings of fruit. So it had a big mouthfeel. There was sweetness, but that bitterness was brilliant. It just cut through. And I always wanted to trial that with Nitro. But I think we were always a bit conscious that one of the problems with Nitro is, you know, the thing you want from Nitro is you want that head. You want that creamy head to be drinking through. That's kind of the thing that gives you that cask mouthfeel thing, because you're not getting the carbonation. But it also masks aroma, and so we did it. They did $10 Shake in Nitro, and it was great to do it. It was great to trial it. But I think it absolutely nailed, you know, that argument. You know, don't do an IPA in Nitro. You know, you're just going to lose so much aroma. So happy we tried it.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't know these things until you try them, do you? So that's fair enough. That's what experimentation is all about.
Exactly.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. What's your favourite Siren beer and why?
Oh, do you know what? Soundwave for me is my go-to every day. You know, if I'm out somewhere and there's a couple of choices of Siren something, I'll pretty much always pick a Soundwave. Mostly because I also want to make sure I do the QC part of it while I'm out and about. But Soundwave has been kind of like our baby right from the start, so that's always there. But I think for me, it would probably be It would probably be any one of the maidens, because I am a barley wine lover. Mm. Barley wine is life, and I just love how what we've created with that beer. I love the changing from the different the different vintages, and I just love a barley wine proper sipping drink, you know.
Yeah. Can you recall a particular vintage that stands out above the rest?
Yeah. Actually, I have probably. If I'm going to give three, I'll give you another one in a minute. But a different beer. But probably 16 is the one that stands out in everybody's memory as being like a real standout. And actually, we opened one up recently, and that was one that stuck in everybody's memory. And actually, I think probably 18 or 19 stands up above the 16 now, if I'm honest. So.
Okay, excellent. And what was that third one?
Odyssey 001.
So
I wouldn't go as far as calling it as a series, because it changes every single time, but we use the name Odyssey to describe stuff that we blended from the barrel room. Mm. And 001 was the first one we ever did. The big base of the beer was Even More Jesus the Eighth, which is a beer we did with Evil Twin.
Yeah,
and we had it in bourbon and Banyuls, if I'm correct, and we blended it so it was a blend of those barrels, predominantly that beer, but there was also we also used about 15, I think maybe 20% liquid mistress in there, which is a really we were playing and it was just a case of, well, let's just try a few things and just. And somebody had the idea of putting in a little bit of liquid mistress. See what that does, which, you know, in many ways seems very counterintuitive to this, barrel-aged, massive, thick barrel-aged beer with a bit of licorice that's been aging in, you know, Banyuls and bourbon. But it was, you know, the liquid mistress just really just added a real fruitiness to it. It was, unfortunately, I didn't keep enough of it. So Andy, funnily enough, bless his cottons, Andy Parker brought one over for was it for our 10th? He brought one over recently, his last bottle for us to share.
Oh wow,
so kind of things.
There you go. Truly the nicest man in beer.
Exactly.
Right, okay. I've got a question that has not been posed by me. This is from Ben Hughes over at Jawbone Brewing in Twickenham.
Okay.
And he's asked,
what is the biggest mistake you've made while brewing, and what was the result of it?
Oh, I mean, look, you know, there have been plenty of mistakes. There have been plenty of beers that we've had to dump, and there's always good stuff that comes out of them. I wouldn't go as far as saying our biggest mistake, but we brewed a beer called Far Above the World. First time we used a lot of Galaxy hops, and it got through sensory testing and it got packaged with an expectation of the hot burn that was there that was going to come back and dial back down and it didn't. So we made the decision to pull it from the market, which was a bit nuts and a bit counterintuitive, seeing as it was getting ridiculous unrated taps at the time. It's getting 4.3s and 4.2s and stuff like that. Yeah. People were loving it. But it wasn't the beer that we wanted to make, and it was a mistake. It got packed and it shouldn't have done, and we learned a lot of lessons from that. You know, learned to ask a lot more questions earlier on, and make sure that we're really being true to ourselves at that stage. When you go through the painful process of calling beer back, it helps everybody be aware that. These are the decisions that we've got to make as a brewery. You know, if it's not right, it doesn't go out, and we make it at that point, before we pack it, rather than that point, because that's even more expensive. So,
interesting that it was getting great ratings, though.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. I think, what can I say about that? I think, it had the visual appeal that people were really looking for from their IPAs at the time. That definitely counts. People, they'll drink with their eyes. And
yeah.
You know, that's absolutely part of that sensory perception. I get that. But for us, it had to, you know, we've got to feel that it's the beer that we wanted to put out, and you know, we felt it wasn't, and you know, made the right call.
Sure. Okay. Excellent. So would you do me a favor and pose a question to my next guest, please?
Oh, okay. What's the most experimental thing that you've ever done, and what did you learn from that?
Okay. It's been great fun chatting with you this evening, Darren. Thank you again so much for taking the time out. I really appreciate you spending the time to chat with me this evening. And a massive congratulations on 10 years.
And thank you.
Here's to, I was going to say another, you know, 10 more, but no, why should we stop there? Not just
10
more, 20, 30, 40 more. More than
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a siren.
I want to be digging up stuff, like I saw when I went up to Adnams Brewery not that long ago. I want to be finding stuff that, you know, in our brewery, whatever it is, 200, 300 years from now. That'd be great.
Exactly. That'd be awesome. I think Siren are already very well entrenched in the UK craft beer scene. You know, it's one of those breweries that everybody knows, everybody loves the beers. And so that's just a testament to the job that you guys have done over the last 10 years. You know, even breweries that may have been going on for, you know, maybe been going for a lot longer, you guys are definitely up there with them. So, you know, it's all down to the job that you've all done. So massive congratulations, and I look forward to drinking many, many, many more of your beers.
Good stuff. Well, thanks very much for having me. I look forward to seeing you at the next festival.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, there we have it. That was the chat with Darren. Hope you enjoyed that. It was a bit longer than usual chats, but I was just having so much fun chatting with Darren. And when I came to do the edit, there was really nothing that could come out. Maybe one or two little minor things, but I just thought it's great as it is. Okay, well, next up is another brewery celebrating their 10th anniversary this year, and that's Bristol's Wiper and True. I'll be chatting with Michael Wiper, the co-founder, all about how they got started, what they're doing, and maybe a little bit about what's to come. Thanks very much for joining me on this episode. Don't forget, if you want to leave a message on SpeakPipe, it's speakpipe.com/beerprime. And also, if you want to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, I'm at Beer Prime UK on both of those. If you want to leave me a message of the non-verbal type, then, of course, you can email me at beerprimeuk@gmail.com. Okay, so thanks very much for listening. See you next time.